So actually, I just changed the title a little bit. I put multiple SLEs instead of constantly invariant curves, simply because I will just start with this. But that's what it really means. So for people who are not, so I guess in the audience, not everybody has been acquainted with SLEs. So I'm going to give you a crash course on it. So just a single slide. So this is a stochastic SLE is for stochastic linear evolution. It was introduced by Hamm in 1999. And so here you are in the complex plane. So all the talk is in two dimensions. And you're in the half complex plane, so see the boundary here. And you have, so here is a curve, which is a conformally invariant scaling curve. Actually, this is an example of a polymer in the scaling limit where you have an infinite number of steps. And here, and so this curve, so GT of Z, so this is, you are, this has been grown up to time T. This is the tip of the curve. GT of Z is a conformal map which erases this cut, this random cut in the upper plane, map it back to the boundary. So this red trace is mapped back to this segment, red segment here, on the boundary of the upper plane, complex plane. And the image by GT of Z of gamma T is this point here, the green point, which is actually W of kappa T. And this W of kappa T is a Brownian motion, one-dimensional Brownian motion. And then GT of Z, this map, so Z is any point in the upper plane, outside of the curve. So GT of Z is actually the map, so GT of Z is obeying an equation, which is called the Levenier evolution equation, which is this equation. The differential equation with respect to time at any point Z is given by 2 over GT of Z minus the source term, which is this Brownian path. So it is called stochastic, of course, because the main idea of Schramm was to take as, so if you wish, any trace in the upper plane is coded by a function along, a real function along the boundary, and the main idea of Schramm was really to take as a source function the Brownian path. And that creates random curves, and those curves actually, so I'm not going to use that right today very much, but these random curves actually build up, I mean, mimic, really gives you directly the scaling limit of, say, boundaries of many statistical systems in two dimensions at the critical point, like, for instance, boundaries of Ising clusters, or boundaries of pots of tail collision clusters, and or else. So just for people who like experimental physics, since there are several here, so this is an experimental SLE, so seen at a certain scale. So there are specialists of scales here. So for instance, Bernard, what is the scale of what is the scale of
this is geography, no?
This is?
I believe this is geography, no?
Geography?
What's the matter?
Yes, indeed. So exactly. So this is seen from airplane. And so this is actually a frozen river, and of course, so you see it makes a lot of meanders. So of course, it's not really SLE, but I just showed it to mention one property of the SLE, so that an SLE depends on the value of the kappa parameter here, so which is the only parameter you have. Everything is fixed. So that's the only parameter which is defining this curve. And when kappa is smaller than 4, the curve is a simple curve, and when kappa is greater than 4, the curve falls onto itself. So it falls onto itself a bit like these meanders here. You see, you have contacts here and so on, or pseudo contacts. So you have to see this curve, iterate this kind of process too, because that's a contact circle. That really means conformally, that's really a scaling curve. So you have to do all of these meanders to all scales. So it's really a curve which is continually bouncing onto itself when kappa is greater than 4. So, but it never crosses. So just bounce self-bounces. Okay, so this was a crash course introduction to the SLE. I'm going to use it for several curves, but mainly I'm going to make a kind of general presentation later. But I give you an example, which is the same as before. This is really how the scaling limit of a self-winding walk looks in the plane. This was done by Tom Kennedy. This is a self-winding walk made of 1 million steps. And when so you lose the impression of the discreteness of the path, and you already see here somehow appearing what is this complex paths in the plane, which is supposed to have a certain scaling limit. So it is believed, but not proven yet, that the scaling limit of this path, of the self-running walk in the plane, would be the SLE for a certain value of kappa, which is 8-3rd. So keep 8-3rd as an example, because this is going to be my main example. So 8-3rd is less than 4, so this curve is supposed to be simple because it's self-evolving. Even so, at the scale, because of the way that this is drawn, because of the precision of the drawing, you seem to have a kind of pseudo encounter of the path with itself. But actually, the dimension of this path of those points is 0. So here I just recall a result from physics, which is due to Reynolds in the 80s, which is that the Hausdorff dimension of that path is 4-3rd. The 4-3rd we have several times about here, and which means really that in terms of scaling, that the size, the mean square size of this path, for a number of, if you have a number of steps n, which would be 1 million here, the size squared scales like 3.5, which is just two times the inverse of t. So this is equivalent to this step. It has not been proven yet. Of course, the SLE 8-3rd is known to have this dimension. What has not been proven in the mathematical terms is the fact that the scaling limit of the second walk is a SLE itself, which is one of the question methods. So this is an example, but of course you have been brought back to a well-known statistical system, which is the simplest one you can have, the second walk, which is defined on a square lattice, say, on a lattice, say, like all the paths which are not crossing, not traversing twice the same edge, nor crossing, and with a uniform measure. So that defines the second rule. Okay, I have to be fast on the examples because it's not really, I don't want to make a complete theory of all the examples. So another case is a Brownian path. So this is a Brownian path, or if you wish, a closed Brownian path too, but you do not see the difference. And in red here, I've drawn the frontier of the path, which is just the boundary of the component of the complement of the path which contains infinity. Its boundary defines the frontier of the path. In red, and of course there is a famous conjecture, now a theorem, due to Lawler, Chan, and Werner, that the Hausdorff dimension is 4-3rd. And as is written here, there was this conjecture that indeed this red path you see here, which is the frontier, really locally looks or is a self-running walk in the scaling limit. Because the brown path is really in the scaling limit. It has no scale, no microscope. So if you take this frontier, you build immediately, you have by construction, the path which will be self-evolving. And the question is whether it has a uniform measure. And actually, it is now believed it has been shown that the Hausdorff dimension is 4-3rd, and it is understood that it should be the scaling limit of self-evolving. Here I've put some names, but I don't want to dwell into all the works which has been done. I just put the names here to recall them for people who know about it. And I just mentioned here the percolation external parameter. So if you wish, if you take a Brownian path, take the envelope, that is a closed curve, which is like a closed self-holding loop. So the idea is that these are the same objects. So this is one first remark. The second one is that the same is true of a percolation cluster. So if you take a percolation cluster, like this one, so you have several colors, but this is a single cluster. In blue, you have standard sites, occupied sites, and then in yellow, you have the sites which are supposed to be belonging to the hull. The hull is really all the sites which inside percolation sites which should be connected to the outside, except that this frontier is folding onto itself in the same way as I showed. For this SLE seen from the plane. So it's folding onto itself all the time. So it has an external perimeter. Okay. So because the hull is not a simple path. The path is a scaling limit. Of course, on the lattice, it's never touching itself. But when you really rescale things to take the scaling limit, this envelope of the cluster becomes a non-simple curve, which is bouncing onto itself. And then it means it has a smoother external envelope. And that is what is called the external perimeter. And the hull is really the naive frontier of the cluster. So of course the hull is bigger than the external perimeter. So So they have a dimension 7-fold, the same 7-fold mentioned by Bernard Sapovin this morning. And the external parameter has dimension 4-third. So here you have names of people who address this in physics, or people who prove this in mathematics, and but I'm not going to give all the details. But essentially, I want to say that you have these two different sets. As I said, the external parameter is really the external envelope of the Earth. Okay. And the external parameter here is in the green, in light green. This is the light green class. So the message is that in the scaling limit of percolation, that closed contour, the external parameter, is again the scaling limit of a self-eroding loop. Okay. And the same, it has the same statistics as the frontier of a closed of a bound mass. And actually, the fact that they have some statistics has been proven recently by I think, Lohler, Schramm, and Werner, who at least had it. So, but this was to give you examples. So, essentially, I gave you one SLE, which was the polymer case, the Sabaudin case, and I gave you also the setting of what happens when you have clusters and when you look at envelopes of clusters. I did that because I want to, later on, to look at the potential theory of those clusters. So if you charge a cluster, the charge is going to be on the envelope, on the external parameter. This is why these envelopes are going to play a role in the harmonic analysis of those systems. Before I do that, I have to go into another direction, which is two-dimensional quantum gravity. And so I'm going to give you another crash course because this is the method I'm going to use to extract properties of those systems you saw in the plane. Even though we were in the standard plane. And I should have put quotes, I should have put this between quotes, as the Americans say like that. And because I learned that on the TV, you're looking at CNN, so I should put quotes because it has really nothing to do with real gravity. It's a nickname given by string theories. But it's really going to be doing classical mechanics on a random lattice. But of course, random lattice means a random curvature, random Gaussian curvature, so it means curvature is gravity, and if it is random, it's quantum, so this is, and 2D, of course, because we are in the place. So this is the reason for the nickname. So let's move on. So first of all, the ground you like, which is, somebody yesterday said that classical mechanics classical mechanics is usually on the setting of classical mechanics is on lattices, and so meaning usually regular lattices. And of course, when you look at critical systems, you take very big systems. You look at the critical point, and then you look at the scaling limit of your curves. So here I just drew an example of a triangular lattice, and of course, and boundaries which could be boundaries of occupied or empty sites in percolation, and maybe a path here which would be going to infinity. I just took an example. So an example of random lines on a regular lattice. Well, to do it in quantum gravity means simply that you disorganize the lattice. So instead of taking a nice regular triangular lattice, a big one, you disorganize it, and you do it on a large scale, of course. So you see this is just the same thing, the same system as here, except that now I've changed the connectivity in a random way of the sites. And this defines what is called the random planar triangular lattice. And with the same statistical model as before. And so the fact that it is planar means simply that as soon as you start making random lattices, you can, if you imagine them as embedded in space, then they can have various properties. And to simplify the matter, I'm just going to consider planar lattices, meaning that they could be embedded as either disks with boundary or spheres. So that means planar. But you have to understand that they're not really embedded. What you really mean by that is just the set of sites which are connected by which have nearest neighbors. So it's really an abstract graph which you have.
What is the measure that you're going to want to put on the
It comes the next slide. And I'm not going to give too many details, but the measure will be essentially as usual a Gibbs measure. Suppose you have a random, you take a specific realization of your random lattice, G, you take one. So for G, a given G, you have a part, so take your favorite statistical model M, like kneading model set. So it will have temperature, say, or cupping constant. So Z sub G will occur, I mean, the script Z will be the partial function on your lattice for given realization. Then you weight it at a Gibbs, like the exponential of minus beta, the area of your random lattice. G between bars means just a cardinal of the number of sites. The number of sites, so it's cardinal of the sites, or the set of the sites. So it means you just count your sites, right? Like one, two, the site of your graph, right? And then you sum over all possible planar graphs. So you make a random equal sum over the size of the lattice. But of course, you kill exponentially fast the large graphs. And then you take beta high enough. And of course, this one has a hidden parameters, like, say, copying the easing model.
But does the distance between sites affect when I'm in a particular G?
Yes.
Does the distance between sites affect the coupling between the sites or
not? No. You take a uniform easing model on all the.
So it doesn't
just
matter. If G distorts it, then it's still unit coupling.
You just take the easing model, or calculation, you put a certain probability to occupy the site. Something simple. And then you have two parameters. You have the parameter of your Siskel model, or minimal if you wish. And then you have this extra parameter beta. And then you take beta high enough, and then you let beta go down. And when beta goes down, of course, the big graphs are weighted more and more. And there will be a critical point, beta sub C, depending on which model you have put, because of course they are coupled together, at which suddenly you have your statistical sum is dominated by infinite graphs, or large, very large graphs. So you will be a certain beta C. Okay.
And that
you have also to make a fine-tuning to, because you have a hidden parameter in your partial function, so you make also a fine-tuning of your, say, your coupling constant of the easing model to a Kc, such a way that you have a double critical point, which is double critical point of M, the system, and the graph.
So I'm probably not understanding it, but then if Zg is thermodynamic,
yes.
Then isn't this essentially just the beta C going to be the free energy?
That will be also a part coming from this.
I understand that.
So,
but the critical beta would be the free energy of the partition function.
No, it would be some parameter in which you are usually able to calculate, actually, because those systems are so good. But it looks like the critical free energy, but also this will be also big, the ZG, the combination of it. So there will be a combination. But you understand very well that if you let, suppose you take Zg equal 1, so nothing on the, so just for pure gravity, pure random graph, then this system is calculable by random matrix techniques. And you have your beta C and you calculate it, you can calculate everything you want. And actually for the easing is solved too, calculation is solved as well. And actually I just use this question by you to mention that this is really a summation of partition functions. So, which is in what in statistical mechanics people call the annealed case. So you don't sum; you are not looking at the. So it looks like an annealed problem where you sum the partition, not the free energy. So and actually, they are usually all of these systems are usually solvable. So they look more complicated than the plane. But the fact is that you have taken away all the constraints linked with the fact that you had a regular lattice. And by doing this, you have simplified your life. You have simplified your life in more than, simplified your life dramatically. Nevertheless, I'm going to use this to go back to the plane data. So I move on. Before I go, I use quantum gravity. I go back for a minute to the plane, as before. And remember, the title had multiple SLEs. So this is the same picture as before. So you can see it as in two different ways. It could be either a self-folding walk in the half plane because of this Galilei boundary here. So the self-folding walk starts at the half plane but doesn't touch it again. So it's repelled by the boundary. So a self-folding walk drawn by Kennedy, actually 1 million steps, or also a very good picture of an SLE, A3rd, which is grown by the Loebner equation, another evolution, stochastic.
So excuse me, to keep it from hitting the boundary, you just select the ones that don't hit the boundary?
I guess that's right. It's a standard problem. I mean, I'm not doing anything. I just took the picture from
Kennedy.
It's a standard set of more problems in the airplane.
Okay.
So you know this
very well. Yeah.
yeah, exactly, we just did. So it looks, this is more. So I just want to mention something which will come later, which is seems to be a bit abstract, yeah, at this level, which is the fact, so this is one, but of course you could grow several ones together. So either, so there would be several lines, so I call it S sub L, so L is the number of lines you take. So that would be a star, so an example, a simple example would be a polymer star, which is anchored at the boundary of the half plane, and which grows in the outer half plane. Okay, then, so this D means Dirichlet, means this boundary is avoided, like here. And then there are these quantities, because I'm going, so they will look for time being abstract, as abstract, but I'm going to try to explain them. So you have these numbers here, x sub 1, 1 because this is for the tip here, x sub 2 because you are in the middle of the chain, so you have two legs, two lines which are going out of your point on the pass, so it's just a two-leg pass. And if you are at the boundary and you have a semi-infinite pass going out, you have x sub 1 because this is one pass. But I put a tilde because this is at the boundary. So tilde will mean boundary in all the plane. And of course, if you have a star which is starting near the boundary, you have n lines or n legs, if you wish. So x tilde for the boundary effect. So this is in this neighborhood. And sub l because you have n lines. And so these numbers, these quantities are really critical exponents. They will be called conformal weights in the next slide, but they are really linked. They are one half of the scaling exponents you showed this morning. This morning you had your percolation system with some scaling exponents, 5, 20, 24. That was one of the slides. So these are numbers, these are exponents which are going to control the behavior of the pass in certain neighborhoods. I'm going to give a better definition in a minute. But so the idea, so you will have, so essentially the neighborhood of the tip, neighborhood of a typical point along the pass, and the neighborhood of the pass near the boundary, or near the multiple star, at the apex of the star. So I'm doing this because these numbers are going to be universal critical exponents, so they will be part of the theory, and I'm going, but of course, if you have those in the plane, you will have similar things when you are in random geometry. Remember that I'm going to play with the random lattices. And so this would be the definition in the for the ones we just saw here in the for the time being the half plane or upper half plane. Yes.
What is the cycle for? You have a cycle.
Yes. This is because you have two ways to say it. Either you this is for a case where you would be say percolation system. So that could be a percolation or an easing model. So that would be the boundary of a cluster. Yeah. You can have a loop model, right, in general. So if you have a statistical mechanics system. Now if you have multiple SLEs, you grow them with a multiple SLE process. So you grow only these red lines. So then you no longer have the loops. The statistics of the line is just mimicked by the interaction between ground motions along the boundary. So you see it either as a statistical mechanics model or just a model of lines grown by this. But in that case, of course, in the case of polymers, you have nothing yet. So this is the same. But when you have simple mechanics, you can have these two representations. So thank you for the question. But essentially, I'm going to concentrate on the geometry of the lines. Well, so I wanted just to explain a little better what these exponents are. So typically, they are either they control the behavior of probabilities or partition functions. In the standard plane, like this is the first line. So essentially the critical behavior, so if you look at the probability that a certain process occurs, like the pass moves out of the half plane and just never touches again the boundary, it will be locally, it will be controlled by the small distance you start at, like little r. The large distance at which you want to go, this probability is going to decay with some power, and that power is just within 2x by definition. So x is really a scaling dimension. Actually, 2x is a scaling dimension. And x will be a conformal weight in the jargon of the conformal field theory. But essentially, these are exponents. If you are, so this is in the bulk. If you say you escape from some obstacle, say, But this is in the upper plane, so you see, so just these are defined with a factor of 2 when you are in the plane, and no factor of 2 when you are near the boundary. So even though I don't give you specific examples, I don't think we really need them here, just scaling of local properties, exactly like the ones you described this morning. Now, if you are, so you see, this is the short distance at which you start your path, and this is the large distance at which you want to go. So this large distance is really the size of your system. And you see you have r to the 2, r to the minus 2x. So r2 is really the area. So x then is a scaling up, is a scaling exponent. Now, if you are in quantum gravity, qg here, you do the same if you calculate partition functions in a certain way. You are going to measure everything in terms of the size of your random lattice, the area of your random lattice, which will be in between. So this cardinal of g, the number of sides, with a certain average, the typical size of your random lattice, because you have to which is going to be controlled by certain parameters. So typically, so g like that between brackets is the typical lattice area of the random lattice. And the boundary length will be just typical boundary length will be the dg between brackets. So in exactly the same way that here this was scaling like r to the minus 2x, and r to the 2 was the area. Here you take the area of this random lattice, and you just look at the contribution to the partition function of a certain path or a certain environment. And then you will have a certain exponent delta, which is written delta by convention, in the quantum gravity setting. So I just wrote this because to say that x and delta are in one-to-one correspondence. This is in the standard plane, or complex plane, or half plane. This is in quantum gravity. And if you are near the boundary, you will have the same. You measure things in terms of the length of the boundary. Like here, it was r to the minus x tilde. Here, it is dg to the minus delta.
So actually, this average is lower one.
The average would be over the random lattices, but it should be like the typical size of your random lattice. Because you have this beta parameter which allows you to control the size. So,
if I had pure gravity, what would be the value of delta?
I'm sorry?
If I had pure gravity, what would be the value of delta there?
Oh, that if you have pure gravity, you have to put something on your system to have some operators. So you would have to put something, otherwise you would not have any delta. But in pure gravity, you will have something which is called gamma, which will control the partition function, as this gamma will be minus 1/2. But it's not exactly a delta. Delta would be, still I think it's 1/2 in some definition. But I just, somehow, it's a kind of abstract equations, but just want to say that as soon as you have this kind of critical behavior, you will have similar critical behaviors on the random lattice, even so, you have to work a little bit to express that. But the key point is that they are related one to another. So the fact that they exist on both sides is obvious. You have two different systems. But the key point is that they are related one to another. And this is KPZ. But of course, not your KPZ. The KPZ, this one is Nizhny-Polyakov, Zavrejnikov. And so that really was a breakthrough in 88. So they realized that there is a law, there is a general map between the exponents in the plane and the exponents in the on the random lattice in quantum gravity. So again, it's a bit abstract, but you heard this word today, this morning with Professor Zipf's talk. You had an operator, so an operator, a quantum operator, is something which creates a local environment in this talk. So say it's typically, locally you are at the boundary of a loop, that's, you know, sitting there just corresponds to something in the operatorial sense, or you are at the edge, at the tip of a random path, another operator. So a certain environment, so like creating a line transmitter, a certain conformal weight x, this x I just showed before as probability. So, and then this x is a certain map, the image by a certain map u of the corresponding exponent in quantum gravity. And of course, if you are at the boundary, that the same will be true. X tilde will be the image by the same map u of the delta tilde of the same corresponding, say, geometrical environment in quantum gravity. And I'm going to give you examples here. So see, I've just recalled the change, and here just a definition of delta and delta tilde, which are the corresponding conformal weights in quantum gravity or scaling exponents. Okay, and so now the question is, what is U? And I'm going to give you the form of U for SAE. Even so, I shortcut the work of the work with these people because it was done before SLE existed. So the map is a quadratic map. So you see X, this scaling exponent, is the image by U of delta. You see it's quadratic in delta, and there is of course a parameter because you have to say at which system you look at. And for us, you know, these systems are those random paths, SLEs. So if I take an SLE with the parameter kappa, so for instance, kappa would be 8-third for a scaffolding walk. So if I take scaffolding walks on a random lattice, you put kappa equal 8-third, and this gives you your U map. And in this case, actually, the map is really equal to 1/3 of delta, 2 delta plus 1. In the case of kappa equal 8-third, this is the map you get. Thank you. So it becomes just a well-defined function for a given process. So if you keep in mind polymers or ground motion of that collection, this would be the Cartesian map. It looks a bit complicated here because I kept the cap. Well, there is an inverse map, of course. So you can express delta being positive in terms, so the solution of this quadratic equation in terms of x. So this is a positive solution. So of course, you have a square root when you inverse. So that's quite elementary. There is something which is nice, actually, which is, I'm just saying that for people who know about duality, like Peter Jones. So duality, the duality means that there is something I didn't say, that when you have this SLE, so remember the SLE of the first slide, you had SLE with certain parameter kappa. When kappa was greater than 4, I said that the LSLE was bouncing onto itself, like this frozen river. And I said it had to have an external envelope. So the point is that if kappa is greater than 4, the external envelope is another SLE, the value of the kappa of which is 16 over kappa. So the duality, if you have a kappa which is greater than 4, by the map 16 over kappa, you go to kappa smaller than 4, and that describes your frontier. Because the frontier is a random path which has to be simple, while the first one is non-simple and bouncing. So this is a duality which describes this frontier problem. And so there is a reflection of this in the fact that X can be also written, this equation can be also written as a product of the two inverse maps. And here it's totally symmetric. So you see duality in action. It's just a remark. So essentially you have this map. So it means that if you are able to compute one of the scaling dimensions in the plane or the half plane, you will get them in quantum gravity by this map, or if you are able to calculate them in quantum gravity, you should be able to get them in the plane. Or of course, compute both and check the cavity. Well, I'm going to use this, and I'm going to use this because this something I didn't tell you yet, is the fact that in quantum gravity, things are much simpler than in the plane. So I'll try to convince you that this is useful. So I'm going to give you the rules in quantum gravity. And so this is one SLE. It was red before, now it's black. So one SLE, but it is blue and have a random boundary. It means we are in quantum gravity. So suppose you imagine this random polymer, say the path, but now the random lattice, and you take the scaling limit. It means you have a real fluctuating electron. Okay? So that would be something like that. So if you calculate the delta tilde one, it is of course the inverse image of X, like this. So this is just a different, this is Cartesian map. And it happens, so I don't give you the value. The value is, it has a certain value, 2 over kappa, or this thing. Now, I'm taking something really simple to start with. Now suppose you take two paths, take two paths, two SLEs, which are diffusing away from the boundary. So actually, the point is that, in quantum gravity, so you are near the boundary in quantum gravity. So boundary quantum gravity is additive, meaning that the dimension you have for two paths is just two times the dimension for one path. So it means these scaling exponents are just additive. It is as if these guys were independent, because when you have probabilities which are factorizing, the exponents are additive. So additivity, in a way, tells you that this path in quantum gravity became independent, which I drew here, meaning that each one lives in its own piece of random surface. So there is an invisible boundary between both, which I drew here. They never touch, because remember, they are mutually avoiding here, this path. So they don't touch, they don't have the right to touch. so they diffuse away. And so it means they live in, so if you are with a fixed metric, the fact that they can come close together is something very sensitive to properties of non-intersections. But when you have a fluctuating metric, the important thing is that they are just in different sectors, because the distance is always fluctuating. So somehow that is what explains, in short, of course, the fact that they become light independent. And so the dimension are just like, so it means that this use of the values in the half-plane are obeying this complicated law of parallels. So this is additivity in quantum gravity. But of course, this is in the half-plane, in the half-plane, and they obey this rule. They are via the square roots. Yes.
So they're independent once there's two, but they don't follow the, but each individual one does not follow the same law that a single one would have. So they are
in a way I certainly it's but I'm not saying that they are independent really. I'm just saying it is as if they were independent. But in a way still each one lives as if you see when you have a single one, the only thing you know is that there is a boundary here. Okay? And in a way when you have a second one, the only thing you know is that it doesn't have the right to touch this one. So it means there is an invisible boundary. So it is as if it was alone in quantum gravity.
Yeah, but with
but in terms of the probabilities that I don't know. I recalculated quite a function. There is something like that. So it's really fundamental. The additivity, of course, is fundamental. So now if you have a star, well, that will be the same. You have the L lines, delta sub L will be L times delta 1. And so meaning a certain relation between those guys via these functions, which I recall are just square roots, essentially square roots. So of course, 2 over kappa times L. Okay, I have to move on because I want to use this and to convince you that there is some interest in this. I'm going to, before I have to do that, I have to do also something else. I have to, so suppose now you have a Brownian packet here. Okay, suppose you have a Brownian packet. So here, when it is white, it means we are in the standard upper half plane. So these guys, so they diffuse independently. You ask what is the probability that they diffuse from a small distance r to a large distance r, you know, and without touching the boundaries, independently. So each one has a probability which is scaling like the distance capital R to the minus 1. So if you have n of these, the exponent is just n, because this probability factorized. So the exponent will be just n. Okay. Now, suppose you switch on gravity. It means you let this lattice here fluctuate, the metric fluctuates in the upper half plane. So this is blue, so your boundary fluctuates also, if you wish. And then these paths are still diffusing. So if n was the exponent associated with the probability that n independent paths are diffusing in the upper half plane, okay, then in quantum gravity it will be the pre-image by u, of course, because of the KPZ map. So it will be u minus 1. And remember, u minus 1 is given by this complicated formula, of course, depending on that. So, and you see, so it means that it was linear in the number of paths, and now it becomes non-linear in the number of paths. So the reason is that the ground paths, which are independent of the fixed metric, are strongly covered by the metric fluctuations in quantum gravity. Okay, and you see it, it's quantified by this formula. I hope I don't go too fast, but I'm just trying to tell you that the message is the following. Things which are independent in the standard plane, factorized and exponents are additive. Like here, n copies of the same ground path, the exponent is n. But right, and once you break them in quantum gravity, they are coupled by the fluctuations, so they are no longer independent. So their exponents have become non-trivial, and not only that, but you can calculate them thanks to this amazing KPZ map. But the other thing is that when they were interacting like this, say, I no longer have this one, but when they are interacting like mutually avoiding in the upper half plane, it makes things complicated because they could cross and then they avoid each other. But once you switch on gravity, then their exponents become linear. So the interacting paths, the mutually avoiding paths, become as if they were mutually independent in quantum gravity. You see? So it's quite striking because just the same, but with interactions. When you have no interactions, they are switched on by gravity. And when you have mutual interactions, they are switched off by gravity. Mutual avoidance.
Yeah, mutual avoidance. The only one. If you would have something with both
if you start with I just give you potential theory, whatever, that would be your opposite. I'm going to give you an example. Actually, I forgot one thing. So now, you can do also transmutation, because you have to believe me here, but remember that the dimension of this path in quantum gravity is given by this formula. This is this. But you can say, well, it should be equivalent to a certain number of SLEs which are moving in the upper half plane, just mutually avoiding SLEs, like the ones I had before, the star, collector, the star, polymer star. So if you want to do that, so this one has this conformal weight, which is delta theta n. This one, if it, because of the additivity, this one has n times 2 over kappa, remember? And these guys will be equivalent if this is equal to that. Because 2 over kappa is just the weight of one pass, and they are additive here. So if I want to count the number of paths, which is equivalent, number of paths is just given by the weight of the packets, the Brown packet, let me finish this, the weight of the Brown packet divided by the weight of one pass. That gives me the number of equivalent paths. So this number of equivalent paths, of course, is non-integer, because these guys are not integer numbers, but this equivalent number of paths just given by the ratio of these weights, so the weight of the Brown packet, divided by the weight. See, we are in quantum gravity, remember, these are u minus 1 values. So, and divided by the weight of single pass, and the weight of single pass is 2 over kappa, so I get this equation. Meaning that this delta theta is equal to that. So it means that I will be able to replace these guys in partial functions or in critical properties. You can replace a packet of these guys by a packet of those ones. Because of this linearity. I want to move on. So I think I count. We are in time with
So
you know the you know this thing. So
the previous, no, so that's what I'm asking. So on the previous slide, the M, Brown M pass.
Yes.
So we don't know anything about kappa. How kappa appears in the magic of quantum gravity and Brown motion? Because there's no kappa around.
Either you have a curve nearby or they flow on your systems called systems. So there are ways to come. Yeah.
So you're still thinking in terms of some stat-mat problem.
I'm still thinking in terms of the vicinity of some curve which has kappa. Yeah. Which is exactly what I'm going to use for quantum gravity. So but before that actually probably I won't do my job for the electrostatic problem, but I want to give you an example. So this works once introduced by Van Linvernal in 2003. So this is a problem. So we are back. I forget about quantum gravity here. So we are in the upper half plane. You have a packet of Brown paths which are m independent Brown paths which are blue. You have n independent Brown paths which are red. Okay. So I take copies of each. Okay. So this is why you have this maze of blue ones and red ones. So now you ask the following question. So there is no quantum gravity. So you ask a free question. What is the probability that I am in the upper half plane? I start this Brown path near the boundary. I let them diffuse. What is the probability that they go to a certain distance? Okay, this probability is going to decay with certain exponent. This probability is that they diffuse together without going back to the boundary. So it's directly boundary. And with one property, which is that the blue are always hidden by from the red in such a way that they can overlap with the red. But the boundary of the external perimeter of the red, the shadow of the red, the right shadow here, should not be touched by the blue. So if you wish, the blue should be always in the shade of the red, to the right, only to the right. You ask this question. So it seems to be, it means the blue has the right to touch the red, but they never should touch the extreme points which are visited by the red. Looks like a complicated question. It was solved by Van Linvernal using. But you can solve it in quantum gravity, so you do the following. You decide, you first transform, you know that you can transmute your paths. So you transmute your packet of blue paths into a packet of blue self-holding walls. You decide to take the SLE with kappa equal 8, okay? Because you know that the boundary, you know that the boundary of the red ones will be a self-holding wall. So you decide that. So you transmute them into this SLE with kappa equal 8, actually. So you use this transmutation I was mentioning here four cap I put it, you know, like here. So you have three folds. So it means that the packet of n, like the red packet, in quantum gravity it has this dimension. This is the quantum gravity, which gives you the number of equivalent paths in terms of self-winding modes, the blue ones. So this n of n, which is here, this number of red ones. So for the blue ones, you have an n of m for the packet n. Now you say, remember that you want, so it means that the blue do not have the right to touch the red boundary. So it means the blue ones here do not have to touch this one, this single one here. So now you want to, so these are equivalents, and now you want to compute the exponent here. So you use quantum gravity. You say that this guy should be avoided by the packet, by the other red, and by the other blue. Okay. So you start here, so you start inside. So this section you want to calculate, but you start within all of these parentheses. So here you have your red packet, n pass. U minus one means you are in quantum gravity. So imagine you're going past in quantum gravity. But you know that this one should not touch the other one. So you take it away. Okay? Take it away, you subtract this three-fourths, which is the value of the single self anymore. Once you have done this, you are in quantum gravity. In quantum gravity is the reason for which you can subtract it from this one. Now you make a U map, so you make a U turn, if you wish, you make a U map to go back to the plane. So you make several back and forth transatlantic flights, if you wish. So you go back to the plane. So once you do this, it means you have somehow the value in terms of scaling constant of your red system minus one second more. But remember these red ones, so these two red ones here, can overlap with the blue. If they can overlap, it means in the plane. It means the x ones are additive. And so you are in the plane. So you add now with a packet of Brownian paths, which is equivalent to the packet of blue circling walls that the same. You add it. But now you want to remember that you want to say that there still exists. The one you took away still exists. It should be avoided. So because it should be avoided, you have to look at what it gives you in quantum gravity. So it means you go back to quantum gravity. So another, you see, U minus one, you add, you go back to quantum gravity, and now you say they should be mutually avoiding, so you add now the one you subtracted. So of course, if all of this was linear, you would have done nothing because you subtract and you add. But they are highly non-linear. So you calculate this, so you see, you have, and then of course you are in quantum gravity, so you have to come back once, the last time, to go back to your original problem, which is in the upper half. So you see, you have just a nested system of U minus one, U minus one, U. Means you have gone away, come back, gone away, come back, and now you and still back you have done something non-trivial. And you calculate 6 months, you find something quite complicated, which is the universe. So this n plus n tells you the probability of two of the paths to escape simply. And then you have a positive number which has been added, which is the square root of square roots, which tells you that the blue ones remain in the shade of the red ones. Okay, so of course, I think I have still 5 minutes because we started 5 minutes late. So, and I will miserably crash. So, I wanted to describe how you use this to calculate the harmonic measure of fractals. So, essentially, you have now one electrode, which is say the Brownian path as it was in the beginning. You charge it. So you put this at potential zero, you put the potential one far away, and you look at the way the potential vanishes when you approach this electrode. So essentially, you have to solve Laplace equation in this space with a very specific boundary conditions on the fractal. Well, so it's described by something which is a multifactor spectrum, namely that you look at points. So you look at the way the potential vanishes when you approach a certain point. So this is a naive point of view. So essentially, when you approach a certain point, locally, for a certain point W on the boundary, the potential will scale like R to the alpha, with a certain alpha, and those alphas are going to vary from place to place over the frontier. So then you look at you see that a point is of type F sub alpha, belongs to the subset of the frontier of type alpha, say F sub alpha, if you have this behavior, and then you measure the other dimension of this boundary subset. The fact that the boundary of a Brownian path is multifactor was in principle done by Lohler, even though he never published it. And So the dimension would be a certain function of alpha, which you f of alpha, which you call the multiple alpha space. Of course, a better way to look at it is just to take a small ball center as a point on the boundary. Look at what is the charge within that ball. That charge is going to scale like exactly like that, like half of the alpha. That defines your exponent alpha. That's the same as looking at the potential, except it's much more stable because you look at a little ball instead of trying to approach a curve, which might be quite wide on the short scale. So the question was to calculate this f of alpha. So I think I am going to skip the details, just to tell you that you can do it using the tricks of quantum gravity. And representing the potential by ground motions. So I'm not going to dwell on this. I wanted to say there are double sided. There are spirals. So you can look at the problem on both sides. So you can look at what happens when you approach the point from both sides. So look at the content of charge in a small ball on one side and on the other side. Then you have two different behaviors. Then you have a spectrum which depends on two variables. You can look also, this was invented by Ilya Binder, really look at the way the potential equipotentials locally spiral like logarithmic spirals. So you say that this would be a point on the boundary, and this would be just a drawing of this, naive drawing of the way the boundary winds about this point locally. It winds infinitely like lambda log of r. Lambda would be the spiral rate. And then you could look at four points, which where you have both the scaling behavior of the potential and a certain logarithmic rate at the same time. That defines another spectrum depending on alpha and lambda. That was done, the invention of this process was done by here in his thesis a little more than 10 years ago. So I'm going to skip the details. So there is a way to represent this potential problem. Remember, we have a potential problem, but the potential is really exactly the same as the probability that a Brownian pass, starting at the point where you measure the potential, diffuses away, reaches the boundary u per 1 without having touched into zero. That's exactly the same. The probability is a potential. So to calculate those multifractal measure, f of alpha, you remember the multifractal spectra, what you do, you there is a standard trick, which is to look at moments of the potential. So you take several copies of the drawing pass. They are going to give you the moment of the potential or the moment of the harmonic measure, which is just the content of the charge within a small ball on the boundary, like here. You look at these moments, you calculate these 6 months, you do it with quantum gravity, even though I'm not going to explain to you how, but you had the taste of it already with Brown class. And you use and also if you want to look at the way they spiral, then you are going to let your boundary spiral and your packet of paths also spiral inside. So you are going to have to describe this kind of events, or those kind of events, and that can be done with quantum gravity for this one and Coulomb gas. Well, I'm just going to jump to the conclusion. And this was a demonstration, but just wanted to say that the spectra are going to look like that. F of alpha depends on which SLE you took. So the coefficient B here depends on kappa. And if you put the spiraling rate, you have a scaling load, and you find it almost the same, except that there is minus lambda. And this was joint work with Ilya Binder. And nowadays, we are trying to derive rigorously from